98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station. Burns and Gambo, the 4 o'clock reset. 4 o'clock reset.
Top stories of the day presented to you at 4 o'clock every day here on the Burns and Gambo show. And we start with first pitch between the D-backs and the Nationals, just minutes away over on ESPN 620. Game two of this four-game series on the road in the nation's capital. It's Taylor Widener versus Max Scherzer today. Meanwhile, for the Diamondbacks, pitching coach Matt Hergis shared what team's plan is in trying to get things right with Madison Bumgarner. He'll start this weekend.
Not that we're ignoring analytics and TrackMan and things like that, but it's I guess the premise is he's getting back to execution. And I've always said that. Even last year, I think the reason why he wasn't successful every time out is because he wasn't executing.
Very interesting, because you pointed out earlier, so many teams are steering towards that type of analysis, and the Diamondbacks appear to be steering away from it when it comes to Mad Bum.
You know, we got to try something different, because he hasn't been able to get anybody out since he's become a Diamondback. So, yeah. Time to try something different.
Tommy Lloyd already making news as the new head coach of U of A. Perry High School's Dylan Anderson, a four-star seven-footer, has committed to the U of A Wildcats.
Yeah, a top 50 recruit in the country, rated as the number one player in Arizona by some places, and a kid who had a chance to go to Creighton, he had a chance to go to North Carolina, I believe Gonzaga, Arizona State. He chose the U of A. A lot of it had to, and he was, you know, Gonzaga was under consideration, but he chose to go to the U of A.
Yeah.
Great signing.
Anthony Davis has been cleared to resume basketball activities. But the Lakers say they're really going to slow play this
thing. Whatever it is that he returns, you know, it's not going to be a full return to, you know, playing 30-some minutes a night. You know, he's going to have to use some games to try to get himself back in shape. So the first few games he's back will likely be short-minute performances.
That was Lakers coach Frank Vogel last night after their loss to the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, this is the time, right, where they're going to start making sure they get their guys back, ready to go for the playoffs to try to repeat as NBA champions.
He has not been on the floor since Valentine's Day. There is no timeline for LeBron James, though the buzz around the team suggests it might be a couple more weeks for him to come back from that high ankle sprain. So the Lakers continue to kind of hang in there. I think they're 3-3 in their last six games. I think
they don't care about seeding. I mean, they're the defending champs, and they feel like they got the best team. So they don't. I mean, if they have to play in a play-in game, which isn't going to happen, I don't think. But they don't care about where they get seeded.
The big story of the day that leads into our top story of the day is from the Utah Jazz. It appears they might have caught a bit of a break today, as the injury to Donovan Mitchell doesn't appear to be as severe as initially thought.
So early optimism, I'm told, that this is not a major injury. The x-rays were negative. He'll take an MRI. He'll get an MRI tonight. He'll know better the severity of the injury. But I'm told it's a lower ankle injury, and he was able to maybe put a little bit of weight on it as time progressed after the game. But they'll know more after that MRI.
Third quarter today, rare day game on a Friday for the NBA. Third quarter today, Jazz down by 9 to Indiana. He tweaks his ankle, has to be helped off the floor, can't put any weight on the ankle at all. And it was right before we went on the air, too, and I was like, oh, my God, this is going to be a big story, because this looks bad. It was really bad.
It was 8 minutes and 30 seconds left in the period. Him and the Pacers small forward, Edmund Sumner, were trying to track down Elise Blue's ball. Sumner got to it first. Mitchell leaped up, tried to deflect the pass, the outlet pass, and then the force of Sumner's throw caused him to rotate his body. He landed awkwardly, went down in a little bit of a heap, stayed down for a little bit, collapsed on the court. He dragged himself over to the sideline right in front of the Pacers bench, and then eventually he was helped off the court and into the locker room by a pair of teammates.
Yeah, if you're to look at the video, it looks terrible. It was pretty severe when you saw it.
Yes.
But again, Woj reporting, x-rays negative. MRI tonight, the initial belief is that it's not a major injury and it's a lower ankle sprain. And for the Jazz, they ended up winning. They were down 9 when that happened. They held Indiana to 42 points in the second half of that game. And the Suns thought they were going to crawl to within a half game of the Utah Jazz with that, but it didn't happen. The Jazz are still up by a game and a half.
No, interesting today, too. The NBA legend, Dwayne Wade, buys a minority ownership stake in those same Utah Jazz.
Yeah, that's right. That happened, too. So that kind of leads into our top story of the day here on the Burns and Gambo show. What was going on with Utah? The scoreboard watching that we were going through, and for a second there, I mean, look, nothing's really changed. The Phoenix Suns still have a chance to catch the Utah Jazz. But depending on how long Donovan Mitchell could be out with this injury, and the fact that the Suns won again last night, Suns have one more game on this homestand against San Antonio on Saturday night. Then they go on that big, huge road trip where things are going to get really, really tough for them.
Sure.
Do the Suns have a chance to catch Utah, and does it matter if the Suns catch Utah when it's all said and done?
Do they have a chance? Sure. Why not? Why wouldn't they have a chance? If Donovan Mitchell's going to miss a couple games now, we don't know. I mean, Donovan Mitchell may miss 2, 3, 4 games, and the Jazz struggle in those games. Phoenix has a tough schedule, but they're very capable of beating all these teams. I mean, they've won 2 games against the Heat. They've beaten some of the better teams in the league, right? They beat Milwaukee. They beat good teams. They're going to be able to win some games on this trip. How many, I don't know. Does it matter? It all depends on who you're asking. Like, I would have been very, very satisfied with any top 4 seed that gave them a home court advantage.
Mm-hmm.
I would have been very happy with 1, 2, 3, or 4. But as you close in on this, you feel like, hey, boy, if you can get number one, because there are people now that are starting to think about winning the championship, not just, hey, be nice if we got to the playoffs and won a series. There are people that, and when you think about that, the home court advantage, especially as fans come back to the building, I know the Suns are very much working on getting more fans in the building, that could be a factor. So, yeah, I do think that it matters, probably more to some people than other, but, yeah, I think it matters.
I think a lot of it, too, matters on and part of the reason why we're asking this, and, again, this was all kind of framed up with the idea that Donovan Mitchell might have been seriously hurt, and it looks like we'll get more information later tonight or tomorrow. It looks like he's been able to avoid that. There was an insider piece on ESPN today in which they kind of polled all their NBA people and said, who do you think the number one seed's going to be in the West? Who do you think the number two seed's going to be? Utah was pulling in like 75% of the vote among those to hold on to the number one.
Okay.
And the Suns were number two at 18%, and I think the Clippers were getting the rest of the vote. And the reason I bring that up, I think a lot of it is kind of dependent on who do you want to play / who do you want to avoid in the first round, because if you end up as the two seed, you might be looking at the Clippers in the second round of the playoffs.
Yeah.
If you end up as the number one seed, you might end up with the Lakers in the second round of the playoffs, potentially, if they're 4 or 5 and they beat Denver. Now, if the Lakers fall to 6, you might end up playing the Lakers in the first round of the playoffs, depending on where things fall out.
Here's what I think on the Donovan Mitchell Utah Jazz thing. I don't think he needs to come back until April 30th. What's today?
Today
is the
16th.
Two weeks from today. 2 weeks from today will be April 30th, and the Utah Jazz will have a game against the Phoenix Suns. Friday, April 30th, they play Phoenix. They play tomorrow against the Lakers. He's not playing tomorrow against the Lakers. They play Monday against the Lakers. They're on the road. I don't know that I play him Monday against the Lakers either. Their next game is against the Rockets. I don't need him against the Rockets to win. The game after that, they've got 2 against Minnesota. I don't need him to play against Minnesota. And then a game after that is Sacramento. I don't need him to beat Sacramento. The game after that is Phoenix. So depending on the severity of this ankle injury,
yeah,
if I'm the Jazz, the way I'm looking at it right now, I got to get him back for that game again. Because after you got Phoenix, Toronto, San Antonio, Denver, that's when you want him back. So if I could give him 2 weeks off with this ankle injury, outside of the 2 Laker games, they could beat Houston, Minnesota, and Sacramento without him.
Yeah.
That's how I would play.
No, that's
it.
A good way of looking at
that's
it.
That's how I look. Now, you don't know. I mean, maybe he's, but like, he's not playing tomorrow against the Lakers. Not with that ankle injury. And it's probably unlikely that he plays Monday, too. So you get to that point, now you start thinking, do you want to rush him back if that ankle's not 100%? Let's give him time off and get him back for that Phoenix game on the 30th. Let's see how it plays out.
This from ESPN Stats and Info. Donovan Mitchell has been averaging 29.6 points per game since the All-Star break. That's the most by a Utah Jazz player since Karl Malone back in 1990-1991. Man, thinking about the playoffs, I hadn't really thought of this. Can you imagine if the Lakers are the 6th seed and they play the Clippers in the first round?
That would be great.
Right?
That would be great. That's exactly what you would want if you're a
Suns
fan.
Let those 2 LA teams cannibalize each other, beat the hell out of each other.
Right.
Absolutely.
7 games, overtime games, just beat each other up. You couldn't ask for anything better than that as a matchup in the second round.
Yeah, the Lakers stay out of the play-in game.
Yes.
But fall to 6. Play the Clippers at 3.
First round.
And you get the winner of that series after they presumably beat the living daylights out of each other in the next round as a 2-3. Yeah, that's...
So you'd be the 2 seed to get that.
You'd be
okay, what if you're the 1 seed?
And then the, so then the Jazz would play them.
Yes.
Think about if you could overtake the Jazz for one. And then the Lakers have to play the Clippers. So the, somebody, you know, somebody's gone. And then between Utah and then the winner of Lakers, somebody else is gone.
So you would get Dallas in the first round, the winner of Portland, Denver in the second round, and you'd only have to go through
and Denver
one
without Jamal Murray.
Of those three. Yeah.
Yeah, like, you know, if you wish for it. I mean, if you want to wish for something, that's what you could wish for. Other people just let it work out however it's going to work out.
Last year, the Arizona Cardinals used their first round pick on a versatile defensive player who provides some flexibility on where he can play. Should the Cardinals go exactly the same route this year again? That's next on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, so here's what we got going on right in front of us, and then we'll turn our attention to the NFL draft. D-backs game is underway against the Washington Nationals. That game's on ESPN 620.
Let's go!
Already in the bottom of the first, Max Scherzer versus Taylor Widener, the matchup. And then going right to left on your radio dial here in terms of what we're watching on the monitors. The Philadelphia 76ers and the LA Clippers just tipped off from Philly. That is a game of interest, obviously, for the Phoenix Suns, given that it's a pretty high-quality opponent for the Clippers and maybe a chance.
What are the Clippers behind the Suns?
2 games behind the
Suns. Okay, yeah. It'd be nice to see the 76ers come up with a win.
Yep, it would. So that's what's kind of going on right now. We'll keep an eye on both of those games, in particular the Diamondbacks game, and let you know if something happens there. 2 weeks from right now, I believe the second round is underway in the NFL draft. And so we'll be previewing what the Cardinals are going to do with the 49th pick, in the assuming that's where they still are this time 2 weeks from now. That could be subject to change. They could be moving around to try to pick up more picks. The first round will be done. We'll be on to the second round, on to figuring out what's next for the Cardinals. What they do with that first round pick, Gambo, we've talked about this. We have had many, many conversations about the cornerbacks. We've had conversations about the wide receivers. We've even had a running back conversation or two. Hell, we've talked about Kyle Pitts and whether the Cardinals should spend what it would take to move up in the draft and get him. We have not talked about, we've talked even about some edge rushers, the Miami guys that you've.
Yeah, and I've ruled both Miami edge rushers out for 16. But I'm going to include a defensive player that I've never mentioned before under consideration at 16.
This is a brand new player that we have not talked about
today. I'm going to put him into discussion for a pick at 16, along with some of these other players that we've discussed. You know, including Vera Tucker from USC is one of those guys. I'm going to put a wide receiver in there. I don't know which one yet, but I'm going to put a wide receiver. I think three of them will be gone. So now I'm just trying to figure out who my fourth wide receiver is, but I will put one in there. But I'm going to put Micah Parsons in there, the outstanding linebacker from Penn State who ran a 4.39 40. Now, he's a guy that did play some defensive end in high school, so he's one of those guys with his rare strength and speed, you know, that can rush the passer. He can rush the passer as a linebacker, but he was a very dominant player. He can go sideline to sideline. He could also rush the passer. And you'd be thinking, wow, they drafted Isaiah Simmons last year. Yeah, but think about this. Right, Jordan Hicks may be gone after this year,
right,
and Chandler Jones could be gone after this year. It's possible, and you don't have that future rusher at that spot. So I think that Micah Parsons is a guy to consider for the Cardinals. I think you've got to keep that name in mind when you're looking at 16 and you're saying, hey, who could the Cardinals take? You know, this is a guy that I'm going to probably have in my five as a player who could be taken.
So you are doing the five.
If I do it, a lot of people want me to do it, so I think that I might.
Sarah thrust her fist up into the air. Like, yes!
Don't let the trolls win.
He's doing the Gambo five! Yes! Sarah thrust her
fist. I can't wait to delete Twitter. I really can't. I'm going to celebrate. I got a party that day.
We can't wait for the Gambo five. We look forward to it.
Yeah,
must have radio right there,
like,
right?
Maybe I don't do one. And
No. You're gonna do it a second ago. You're gonna do one. You'll do it.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it. It's just hard. It's hard to do.
Let me play this James Franklin cut.
Okay, go ahead.
The head coach of Penn State talking about how Micah Parsons can fit many different spots into many different types of defenses.
I think he can do a lot of different things. I think he can be a 3-4 backer. I think he can be a 4-3 backer. When we recruited him out of high school, he went to Harrisburg High School. He played defensive end and running back. And that's how everybody, you know, was kind of looking at him as a defensive end in college. If you're interested and you have some free time, just go back and watch his highlights from high school. They're pretty impressive as a tailback. But we thought his ability to play tailback would allow him to play linebacker. We had a need at linebacker, so we put him there. But he's kind of got the body. If he wanted to be 260 pounds, he could be 260 pounds. You know, he's just that type of athlete. And I think that's why so many people, you know, are attracted to him, because I think he can fit so many different spots in so many different systems.
For the sake of reference, all right, the Todd McShay NFL draft player rankings. So okay. Not a mock draft, yeah. But his big board.
Yeah.
You got something?
Nope, I'm okay. Excited to hear this.
Ninth. Ninth best player in the draft.
I don't know that he gets to the Cardinals at 16, but there's a couple scenarios in which he could. We've talked about the five quarterbacks and the three wide receivers and the two cornerbacks and the tight end. I'm already at 11. So if I got five quarterbacks, three wide receivers, okay, that's 8. Two cornerbacks, that's 10. The tight end, 11. And two offensive linemen, I'm at 13. So you know me, I like to do process of elimination on this stuff. So now there's, you know, now I'm thinking, okay, there's three more players, you know, that could get picked, or two more players that could get picked before the Cardinals go, right? I mean, that's just we're thinking five quarterbacks. Are we thinking five?
Five quarterbacks.
Okay, we're thinking two corners, right?
Five quarterbacks, two corners.
One tight end. We're going three wide receivers. And how about two offensive linemen?
Panay Sewell and the Northwestern kid, Rashawn Slater.
Okay, so that's two. So now I'm at 7, 8. Now I've got 13 players right there. I have picks 14, 15 before I get to the Cardinals.
Yep.
So if I'm putting together my five, I've got to have five guys that are going to come in. Now, this, you know, my five could always be messed up if one of those guys falls.
Sure.
Because that's how my five could get messed up.
Of course.
I've never messed it up yet. We've always got it right. But if J.C. Horn falls, well, all of a sudden, okay, you know, that's not somebody I would expect to be there at 16, and now he is. So, but once you get to like 14, 15, 16, now it's like I don't want to rule a guy out that I think could go at 14 at 16. I'll rule out the quarterbacks. They're not taking one. I'll rule out the tight end. They're not getting him unless they trade up. And I'll rule out the top two offensive linemen because I don't think they can get either one of them.
I mean, look, this is a tough one for me, all right, because there's that if he's the best player on the board, he's the best player on the board, and you go get him. They just drafted an interior linebacker last year, albeit one with a tremendous amount of versatility. They just tried and failed, with the exception of last year, to find a spot for Hassan Reddick and a way for him to fit. I was listening to that description from James Franklin, and I know this is probably a really kind of simplistic way of looking at it, too simplistic, but Gambo, I look at it like this. Here's James Franklin. Oh, he could be a this, and he could be a that. And in this scheme, he could be a this. Man, I kind of feel like the Cardinals need to take somebody who is a this. Not who could be a this or could be a that. Somebody who is, right? Not somebody with this positional versatility. Oh, he could play over here. He could play over there. Somebody who has an established position and is very good at that established position, rather than somebody you're going to be experimenting with over the course of a season. This year is not a year for experimentation for the Arizona Cardinals. This is a year for winning football games so that dreams can be fulfilled and people can go to the playoffs and jobs can be saved and et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if this is another year to take a draft pick, a first rounder, on sort of an experimental, well, maybe he could be this or maybe he could be that kind of guy. The pros, no question, are what you just said a second ago. You don't have a young guy who can get after the quarterback in your system. You need one. The cons to me are that you've taken two guys like this in the last 4 years. One of them didn't really work for you very well, and the other one, we're not sure whether he's going to work yet or not, in Isaiah Simmons. You know, and I just don't know if you want to go to that well again and again and again.
You know, he's considered one of the best defensive players in his whole draft.
I know.
Maybe the best defensive player in the draft.
I'm more intrigued by the offensive lineman, I think. I'd certainly be more intrigued by one of the wide receivers if they fell to this spot. If those combination of things didn't happen and there's Micah Parsons sitting there, I don't know what they'll do, but that's an interesting thought. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, it was not that long ago the two organizations seemed like they were in lockstep with each other, mirror images, if you will. Could the Kings follow the Suns' path to increased respectability around the NBA? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. All right, let's put a fresh coat of paint on our Twitter poll question of the day. Find out where things stand right now. Let's turn it back over to Sarah Cazell here on the Burns and Gambo Show.
Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll update, presented by Sanderson Ford.
Usually turning 40 is a big deal, and for the Phoenix Suns last night, how big of a deal was turning 40 for
wow.
Phoenix?
Did anyone buy birthday candles?
We should.
Turning 40? Does that make sense?
They say turning 50 is the new 40 for guys, and I can attest to that. When I turned 50, it was a little, oh my God, I'm 50. But it's all cool.
I don't know, man. I don't really feel anything.
It's all good.
It's the John Campodoro experience. Yeah, I don't feel anything.
I don't feel like I'm old. I don't feel like I'm old.
I don't. I mean, it's just
for my insides.
50's a big weird number, right? It's just it used to be that 40 was a big weird number. 40 wasn't that big of a deal. 50 was like, whoa, I'm 50. Yeah. But whatever. The Suns are 40. They're 40 and 15. How big of a deal was that last night?
Yes. Are you going to do the thing, or did you already play it, Jordan? The little thing.
Obviously, he's not playing it.
Okay. No, it's already been played.
Yeah. I'm working on 4 brain cells right now. I'm very sorry.
4?
4.
4. I wish I had 4.
You said it, not me.
It's Friday. It's 4:34 in the afternoon, and Sarah is like, tick-tock.
I could probably do a lot with 4.
Struggling? The potential.
We played the little deal there, Sarah. Cool. Yeah, we did. So you've got an hour left. Come on. Come on, sister. Let's go. Push through. What do you have for us?
Okay, turning 40. 40 wins, as you pointed out, Dave Burns. We're asking, what does that number mean to you as a Phoenix Suns fan? 3 options for you to vote on. And as I noted at 2:30, there's going to be some overlap between the among the 3 options, but just pick what best represents
bad
you.
News for a lot of the opponents.
Yes.
That's what it means.
Good call. Good call. The 3 options that we have down, what does this number mean to you as a fan? It is a big deal given just the last 10 years. I don't even need to use adjectives, you know. It is a cool milestone to enjoy, but we're not going to sit on it. We're going to just keep moving forward, or not even paying attention to that because all I care about is the playoffs.
I got the second one. I talked you into the first one.
You did.
But for me, I don't want to. I can't. And Vince Murata summed it up perfectly a while ago. Man, you got to enjoy this. Like, you can't just be all playoffs. Like, it's been 10 years since we invested in regular season games the way we are invested in regular season games right now.
Yep.
So I don't want to discredit this regular season. So to me, yeah, I'll take the second one. I could lean for the first one too, but I'll go second because I want to enjoy this and not just dismiss it and only worry about the playoffs.
I went for the first one just because for years we were just hoping they could get the 30 wins and they shot past that barrier like it didn't even exist. Yeah. So I think it's a big deal knowing full well that the playoffs are what really matters. But for now, I think it's a very big deal they're a 40-win basketball team. What's our audience say?
52% of our voters, so I think that went down a little bit from 2:30, not by much, but 52% say the first option. This is a big deal. Let's celebrate it, given the last 10 years for this franchise. 31% went with the second option. Cool to enjoy, but now let's move on. And then 17% aren't really celebrating it, apparently, just looking at the playoffs.
All right, that's the Twitter poll. You can find it on the Burns and Gambo Twitter page, at Burns and Gambo. One word is where it's at. Devin Booker, he's been here for a lot of the junk of the last 5 years. He talked last night about the progress the franchise has made.
I always look back. I don't ever want to take it for granted, you know, after what I've been through. So like I said earlier, you know, any win's hard to come by in this league. So, you know, we try to stay locked in, you know, no matter what our record is. We know we're on the pursuit of continuously getting better. And that's what we've been doing.
There was a weird kind of synergy last night between the Suns and the Kings that we didn't really talk about yesterday before the game. In fact, we didn't talk about it at all, really. It wasn't that long ago that the Suns and the Kings were each other.
Same.
They were the same. They were like that Spider-Man meme where they were pointing at each other, right? They were basically the same team. And I would imagine for the Kings, they've got to look at the Suns and say, if I were a Kings fan, I would look at the Phoenix Suns and say,
what do we got to do to be that?
Exactly.
What do we got to do to do
see
that?
See how, because it's not supposed to be that fast in the NBA. It's not supposed to happen as quickly as it did for the Suns.
No, you're right.
If I'm a Kings fan, I'm looking at the Suns like, how do I get my team to be what they are as fast as they did it?
There was an athletic story, was a Kings story out of The Athletic, and it caught my eye today. And it said, for much of the past 10 years, the Kings and the Suns have been close to each other in the standings. That is to say, they've been two of the worst teams in the league. Now the Kings are chasing Phoenix. The Suns have left the Kings to wallow near the bottom, sending Sacramento to its ninth straight defeat. The Suns are in second place in the West, and the Kings, with each loss, they're getting closer to tying the Buffalo Braves, San Diego LA Clippers for consecutive seasons of missing the playoffs at 15. And they said both teams have had their share of missed opportunities. They talk about Luka, but they said they got DeAndre. We got Marvin Bagley. He's been injured for three straight years. And they just go on to talk about how what's the plan. Phoenix's plan was to go get Chris Paul, and that worked. The Sacramento needs that. Sacramento's got Fox and Halliburton, but they need a Chris Paul. They need to find a true leader that can elevate that franchise. And they very much, you know, drew all the comparisons to how them and Phoenix have been side by side for a decade, and now the Suns have just jettisoned right past them.
Look, I think there's a couple of maybe oversimplifications, but I don't know any other way to think about it. I think, number one, the Phoenix Suns have Monty Williams. The Sacramento Kings don't. And nothing against Luke Walton. But Luke Walton is still kind of trying to find himself as a coach in this league, right? Monty Williams came here, very established guy, five-year deal, first time they had hired a coach like that in their history, and maybe he's brought a little bit more of that kind of seriousness to the organization. Again, nothing against Luke Walton. It's just that Monty's such a highly respected guy around the league, and Luke is still kind of finding his way. That's number one. Number two, even though you'll find like ESPN stories about how De'Aaron Fox is a better under 25 player than Devin Booker, I don't think he's got the resume that Devin Booker has yet, right?
No.
And I mean, not even close. And number three, the Sacramento Kings didn't go 8-0 in the bubble. The Phoenix Suns did.
That's a big part of the story. De'Aaron Fox is quoted in the story. It says they were playing the best basketball in the bubble. With a guy like Book, then adding CP3 definitely helps. Also, giving guys another year of experience, they tasted success in the bubble. They knew what it took because a lot of that team is the same from what they had last year. So a lot of them are pointing to the bubble, the bubble, the bubble. Well, Chris Paul wasn't there and Jay Crowder wasn't there. But it says this, one of the big things that separates the two franchises could be, you know, is Chris Paul, and the Suns went 8-0 in the bubble. So I always use 8-0 in the bubble when we talk because I think the Suns gained incredible experience during that bubble, and they did it without Chris Paul. So I think that there's some indications and signs that the Suns were on the verge of making a jump. Now, they wouldn't have made this jump without Chris Paul. I think we could all agree to that. But they were going to make a jump. If they didn't have Chris Paul right now, I think we'd very much be talking about the Suns battling for one of those 7, 8, 9 spots.
I think
we would be talking about the Suns going to the playoffs. If Ricky Rubio was still here and Chris Paul wasn't, we'd be talking about the Suns being a playoff team, maybe playing in a playoff game, but Chris Paul elevated. And Chris Paul took him out of that whole middle of being 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, and put him right into the top four.
Yeah. Join Ron Wolfley on the eve of the draft in a couple of weeks as the Cardinals get ready to make their first-round selection. Text the word DRAFT to 620-620 for an invitation to the exclusive Arizona Sports Valley virtual draft experience featuring Wolf and other football guests. Again, text DRAFT to 620-620. The Valley Virtual Series is presented by 72 Sold. Get your price. When we come back on this Friday edition, with no head coaching experience, many are wondering how successful Tommy Lloyd can be as the new U of A basketball coach. In just 24 hours since his introduction, Lloyd already has a win. We'll explain next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Talking about U of A basketball in 30 seconds. Jordan Burgess told us that Arizona's family, Channel 3, Channel 5, is doing a story about Dakota at like 5:20.
That's phenomenal.
This afternoon? That's great.
That is so great.
That's awesome. Dakota, if you missed it yesterday.
Channel 3?
Channel 3 / Channel 5. I don't know which one it's going to be on.
It just says EZ's Family, I don't know which one it is.
Yeah. They're the same now with their news, I believe.
So they air the same thing at the same time? Yeah. Okay, so it doesn't matter which one you watch, Channel 3 or Channel 5. So coming up at 5:20 this afternoon, is that what they said?
That's right. Oh, that's
so which one do I record, 3 or 5? Doesn't matter?
Your pick. It's the same thing.
Okay.
Yeah. Just whichever one comes up on your app the soonest, apparently. That's great. Dakota was the young man with cerebral palsy who did our shout-out yesterday, did our bad news for the Kings yesterday. Suns sent out a video yesterday morning. Suns saw it. With a little help from Gambo, tickets found their way to Dakota and his father. They went. They were tweeting out photos and videos from it last night. It looked great, and they're going to get even more exposure today. That is really, really nice. That's great. Glad to see that.
I was happy all day yesterday because of that.
Yeah,
I really was. I had a happy day.
Yeah,
it made me feel good.
It was a very good thing. Tommy Lloyd is the new head coach at U of A. He was introduced yesterday. And we'll play some of that sound from it in a second. He already has a little bit of a win that he can kind of notch as U of A's head coach, and he's been on the job for roughly 24 hours or so. And that would be a 4-star recruit from Gilbert, a 7-footer named Dylan Anderson. He committed to the University of Arizona today. Apparently he was interested in Gonzaga, and he was interested in Tommy Lloyd. Yeah,
Creighton, North Carolina, ASU. I mean, there was a lot of universities looking to get this kid. He's a top 50 player. He's considered by some publications as the number one recruit in all of Arizona. And that's a great get for Lloyd. That's a great get for the University of Arizona. Now, I was reading in one of the Tucson papers about how they're going to cast a wide net, and you know they're going to go all over the place. I mean, Tommy Lloyd did play overseas in Australia and Germany, and so he's got those connections overseas, as we know, and that's going to be part of his recruiting. There are 5 international players already on the Arizona roster, 2 from Lithuania, 1 from Canada, 1 from Cameroon, 1 from Turkey. And I know he doesn't want to have a whole team of international players, so it's good to get the local kid here who's a 4-star recruit to sign. But he definitely will try to get some of the top international players to come play in Tucson.
Yeah, so he's already off to a good start. It has been a real mixed reaction to the hiring of Tommy Lloyd. We've seen the reaction from the alumni. We've heard from the Gilbert Arenas of the world. We've heard from the A.J. Bramlett's of the world. Lloyd played it really, really smartly yesterday, saying, look, I understand. I hear the noise. I can't wait to talk to the alumni, bring them into the fold.
I know the value of former players sitting at home watching their team play on TV and the pride they feel when they watch that. I want to give those guys everything I got. And you know what? I don't have to be the guy they wanted for this job. I'm okay with that. They should be pushing their teammates. And if they were doing anything other than that, I'd probably question them. But moving forward, I can't wait to wrap my arms around them. Okay, ask them to help me on this journey. Do anything I can to move this program forward.
We'll see how receptive they are to that when it's all said and done, right?
Interesting that he addressed that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure
he's
asked
obviously
about
he
it.
Probably heard the feedback that there were guys that weren't happy with that hire.
Yeah, yeah.
So he addressed that like, hey, I'll put my arms around him and hug him and ask him to help me on this journey. Hey, by the way, I just got a 4-star recruit to come here, the top kid in Arizona. He's like that's time to move on. Like, there's nothing you could do. Either you get behind the program or you don't get behind the program. If it works, it works. If it doesn't, he's not going to be the coach in 2 or 3 years.
There was a story, 2 stories yesterday that kind of demonstrate the yin and the yang of all of this. There was a story on The Athletic from Dana O'Neill, and she wrote about Tommy Lloyd like it could be a slam dunk hire for Arizona, that the Wildcats could become the, in her words, incredible Hulk version of the Zags. Gonzaga with benefits, if you will, because it's a state school, because it's got all that money behind it, because it's got a lot of boosters, things that Gonzaga doesn't have. But then our buddy John Wilner over at the San Jose Mercury News, very, very good Pac-12 insider, the best, we think, Pac-12 insider. He wrote about the Arizona hire, and he took a completely different tact. He said, look, take the 24 football and men's basketball coaching positions in the Pac-12. Only 3 are occupied by coaches with no prior experience running a program or no connections to the school.
Is that basketball and football together?
Men's basketball and football. So 24 jobs.
And what have they won?
Hmm?
And what has anybody won?
Well, UCLA went very far in the NCAA
they did,
tournament.
Nick Cronin, they did.
Right.
But, I mean, outside of this run in the sweet, this run with all the teams in college basketball.
Lately, not a lot.
I mean, what are they winning? What are they winning in football? Nobody's going to the playoffs.
His point is that the Wildcats employ two of those three. And I would imagine your counterpoint is why not try something a little different if you're not
working.
Having success.
I mean, nothing's working. Okay. So, listen, John Willen is the best at what he's doing. He's saying, oh, this is untraditional. This is not how you do it. This is bucking the trend. All these other places where they're hiring sitting coaches and they're hiring coaches from, you know, whatever they're hiring, it's not working.
Yeah.
Pac-12 football sucks. And up until this year, Pac-12 basketball has sucked. So everybody's hiring all these people. But guess what? There's no results coming out of it.
He kind of addressed that. And he said, look, it's not like U of A football and U of A basketball are the same thing. U of A football probably needs to take a risk like this, right? They probably need to think outside the box a little bit with the Jed Fish hire. Okay. He continues, like you do, believes, and me to a certain extent, maybe not as passionately as you, continues to believe that the Wildcats is they're one of the top 12 or 15 programs in the country.
Totally, I believe that. I think top 10.
And he writes, in our opinion, a program like that should never, ever hire anyone but a proven winner unless there's a deep commitment to staying within the family. And he backs it up with this. In the modern era of March Madness, i.e. 1985, when the tournament field expanded to 64 teams, there are only 13 schools that have won a title and made at least four appearances in the Final Four. Okay? So since 85, at least one championship and at least four Final Fours. Carolina, Duke, Kentucky, Kansas, UCLA, Michigan State, Louisville, Syracuse, Michigan, UConn, Villanova, Florida, and Arizona. He calls them the bluest of the blue bloods. How many of those organizations are entrusting their programs to coaches with no previous ties to the school and no prior head coaching experience? One. U of A. They're the only ones. So he agrees with you.
I mean, I get it. Sometimes
you need to think outside the box. He just thinks U of A basketball is too big to have to think outside the box. They're U of A basketball.
What ties did Mick Cronin have with UCLA?
None.
They just went to the Final Four.
But he coached a program at Cincinnati that routinely had tournament success. He had previous head coaching experience.
Okay.
At a program that won basketball games, right?
Right. Yep.
Tommy Lloyd didn't have that.
I mean, I get it. Listen, you know how I feel. I think that they should be able to go get any sitting coach they want outside of, you know, 10 different schools. I think they should be able to go get whoever they want. You know, if you really wanted Musselman, you should have been able to get Musselman. You're Arizona. Nothing against Arkansas. Arkansas is a decent program, and they've won a national championship. They have Nolan Richardson. But, like, you should be able to go get whoever you want. You're Arizona. You've got a lot to offer. And they went. Now, this assistant is very much considered the best assistant out there.
Yes.
Okay? He's very much considered.
Very much so.
20 years. He's been loyal to that program. He knows what it takes to coach great players. He knows, you know, these kids go to the pros. He could sell that. He knows how to recruit. He played in Germany. He played in Australia. He recruits international. I'm just saying, I think you got to give this guy a chance. I'm not completely against this hire. I do think they should have been able to get anybody they wanted. They're Arizona. The fact that they didn't may have something to do with the sanctions and where the program is right now with Sean Miller leaving. I'm not 100% sure, but I still think it's one of the best jobs in the country.
I just want everyone to know Sarah Cazell nods her head fiercely in approval on the other side of the glass.
Tommy Lloyd is not just any random assistant. He was the head coach in waiting at Gonzaga.
Right. Gonzaga was going to hire him.
Not just some scrub.
Yep.
Like,
just passing along what is being said out there about the man. When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, speaking about things being said about the man, a lot being said about DeAndre Ayton. He's currently in the middle of maybe his greatest stretch of play since he joined the Phoenix Suns. The rest of the country is starting to take notice. That's next on the Burns and Gambo show.